cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Backtracks Theme Music. My name is Corey Merced, joined, as always, by the ever-charming John Mariano. How are you doing tonight, John?
I prefer you refer to me as the second suitor.
Oh, can anyone guess what movie we're doing? We're doing an absolute favorite of John Mariano and a favorite of our special guest tonight. We can't get enough of him, and neither can you. He's the one and only Scott Haskin. How are you doing tonight, Scott?
I'm doing great. I'm getting really nostalgic for the days when hanging out in a mall was a cool thing to do.
Malls don't even really exist anymore, do they? I know we just lost a liquor store in our mall where I live, so the mall is pretty much dead. John, we talked about this before. You think malls in America are kind of dying as well?
Yeah, it's a really sad thing. Leading up to this movie and when this movie came out, I lived in the mall. It was my first home. My second home is where I'd go home for dinner. But I would live and die in the malls. We had the regular mall. We call it the Broadway Mall here on Long Island that I would go to. There's another bigger mall called Roosevelt Field. And we even had a dirt mall called the Tri-County Flea Market. I used to go to the Tri-County Flea Market, get all kinds of deals. I used to go look at my comic books. We didn't have any three-nippled soothsayers, but we had plenty of other stuff going on there.
Well, I bet you you could find a three-nippled soothsayer in Las Vegas. Scott, what's your relationship with malls?
Well, yes, but I'm not working right now.
Oh,
well, I mean, yeah, we grew up with three malls not too far from us. And then as I moved, there were always malls available. I think what started the decline of the indoor mall was the outdoor strip mall. And then that slowly kind of morphed into the newer thing. Once JCPenney's stores started pulling out of malls, I think that was telltale that it was just a matter of time.
Yeah, we also started getting out like outlet stores here. I don't know if you guys have them, but like just big outlet malls where it's just like, oh, go get the deal there, and it's so antisocial and so newfangled. Like, I miss going to the food court. I miss arguing that you go get the pretzels. The pretzels are not part of the food court. I miss those kind of conversations.
And Christmas time at a mall, there's always something special about a holiday at a mall, the way they would decorate it, the way that you would, you know, want to get every glimpse of Santa when you were a child and ignore him as much as possible as you got older. They were great places to hang out. I'm really sad that up and coming generations won't really get to experience that unless they make a comeback someday.
And they had a store for every occasion, stores like Burning Flesh Tanning Salon and Rug Munchers Carpet Outlet, a couple of the stores that populate Kevin Smith's mall in the movie Mallrats. That's, of course, what we're talking here tonight. John, succinctly as you can, maybe tell us a little bit about your love affair with Kevin Smith and about this film.
Yeah, I mean, the year was 1995. I had missed out on Clerks, mainly because it was always checked out of my video store. I'm pretty sure somebody stole it. Finding movies like Clerks back then that were in limited release were really tough. And Mallrats was like his first big dig into theaters. And I was pumped. I took one of my friends, and it was maybe 10, 15 people in the theater. And I fell in love. Like, I'm like, if this guy's movie Clerks is somehow better than this, sign me up. Because the dialogue, everything just seems so fresh and new and different. And now we've seen it kind of 1,000 times. He's been overcopied. I tried to copy him myself. You know, he inspired me to try my hand at independent film. I went out immediately after this movie. There was a little store next door called Caldor. I walked into Caldor and I bought a corduroy jacket and a shirt with Art Carney's face playing Ed Norton as big as can be on the middle of it, which was the closest I could do to imitate Brody Bruce, because that's all I wanted to be after this movie. So I combed my hair differently, and I was not a skater, but I was dressing like one all of a sudden. Scott, how about you? How did this influence you?
Well, I had seen Clerks, so I was already a fan of Kevin's. And when I heard this movie was coming out, I could not wait to see it. rented it as quickly as I could. And you're right, Clerks was actually the number one most stolen VHS across the state. So it's not surprising you would have had a hard time finding it. This movie was great because I think the dialogue was a little bit better as far as the delivery. Clerks is very rapid, very fast paced. And it doesn't really give room for people to think of a response or respond naturally. It's just like, you finished your line, I got to start my line. So this was a much more natural movie for me. And I'm being such a huge fan of Jaws as Kevin is, I'm a big fan of the Jaws references in this movie as well.
Well, I tell you, I just watched this movie for the first time a couple of days ago. So I have a little different perspective on it than you guys. I'm kind of more mixed to negative. Actually on Mallrats. I thought it was very poorly written, actually. Kevin Smith, you could tell he's just a new writer, still kind of getting used to rhythm and dialogue and things like that. Story aside, story was really good. It was more the dialogue that I had kind of had some issues with. And some of the acting, Michael Rooker, to me, really stuck out like a sore thumb for being particularly bad. I'm used to Michael Rooker being great and everything. But this is a very young Michael Rooker. You know, playing the father of one of the characters, you know, even just the cartoonish way he would like, there's a scene where he ate something gross. We'll talk about the pretzel, I'm sure, and was having, you know, vomiting issues. And even just the way he would cartoonishly, like, you know, lurch and all that stuff. You could tell it was just, it was really bad. But, you know, it's performances by guys like Jason Lee and really Jay and Silent Bob. I think this is maybe my favorite Jay and Silent Bob performance I've ever seen, and I've seen pretty much every movie they've ever been in. But you know, Jason Lee really carries this one for me. I thought he was fantastic. Shannon Doherty as well was a real standout. But overall, yeah, you know, maybe mixed negatives, a little too unfair. Maybe just mixed slightly positive. A lot of good stuff in Mallrats, but some stuff that just kind of stuck out to me like a sore thumb.
Well, I'll give you my take on Michael Rooker, who is a fantastic actor. I agree. I think his character was very over the top in this film. But to me, what this film is it is a live action comic book. It's not it is a film in the Jersey series of movies because, you know, the characters that are in it, how this point in time takes place in the Viewisk universe. But to me, this is very much a comic book come to life. This is the only movie where we really see Jay and Silent Bob as like Batman and Robin and doing comic booky physical things that they didn't really do in other movies. So to me, everyone needs to be a little bit over the top, like the mall cop LaFours. You know, no mall cop, I don't think has ever been like that. Maybe one or two really overachievers. But to me, I just looked at it as a live comic book. So I kind of expected everybody's performance to be a little beyond normal.
Now, you guys are the View Askew experts on the panel. I'll get to you in a sec, John. This is a prequel to Clerks. Is that correct?
No, it's not.
I don't think so.
Because they make certain references in it that the events of Clerks have already happened. Some of the characters, like Dante from the first movie, is playing his cousin Gil in this movie. But they make certain references. I think the girl, I forget her name right now, but she's doing the sex video diary. And she mentions a couple of people from, or I think Rick Derris from Clerks.
Mm-hmm. Alyssa Jones.
You know, is that who it is, Alyssa Jones?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the cousin of Joey Lauren Adams in the next movie,
right?
Chasing Amy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what I love about these Viewers View movies. Everyone's kind of related. The events all kind of reference themselves. I think in Chasing Amy, they actually mentioned the corpse falling out of the casket. In one of the movies, I know they definitely do.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that they happen in sequence. This may happen alongside Clerks, but it doesn't happen before Clerks. It's not a prequel.
Well, see, this one, on Wikipedia, it said it was a prequel. And it's because in the opening scene where T.S. is talking with Claire Forlani, she mentions that the original contestant on the game show died of a brain embolism.
Oh, that's right.
Running, doing all those laps. And that's the funeral that they go to in Clerks. Right. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. It must have just been a couple of days then before, because the funeral happens during Clerks.
Yeah, like literally like the next, you know, the day before or something, which I just want to clarify with you guys, because I was watching it, not, you know, obviously you see him at the flea market there. He pulls out, he wears a clerk hat or finds a clerk hat or a clerk's hat. And I thought, well, obviously this takes place after Clerks, but I was kind of surprised reading that on Wikipedia that it was actually a prequel to Clerks.
I did want to backtrack to Michael Rooker in defense of Michael Rooker. I think he, first of all, I think he understood the assignment. I think his assignment was, he was part, like each part of these stories, like kind of like what Scott was saying at the top, it's a comic book movie, but I think very specifically, he is in a Chuck Jones cartoon, right? Against Jay and Silent Bob. And he's on an R-rated version of that, and he's playing the coyote to their roadrunner in a lot of ways. And it's very over the top. But I was just checking IMDb because you were saying it was like early in Michael Rooker's career. Michael Rooker did some phenomenal work leading into Clerks. Listen, just listen to me run down some of this list. Eight Men Out. Where was it? Eight Men Out, Mississippi Burning, Days of Thunder, JFK, The Dark Half, Cliffhanger, Tombstone. So. You know, yeah, he had probably 5 movies in there with good performances by him.
Great performances. I never would have guessed watching him in this movie that he would have that back catalog on him.
Right. So all of that predates this. So I think that he walked into this. I think it's probably twofold. Kevin Smith works very, very fast. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of this was done in like 1 to 2 takes, where in a lot of these other movies, Michael Rooker's you do one for them, you do one for me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're already moving on to the next shot. So you're not getting his A game because he's probably holding it back. But I think the other part of it is probably he also understood the assignment. He understood he was playing this over-the-top villain and gave you that. Now, it might be campy. It might not be what you will expect out of him or what you're looking for, but I think that's what you were getting.
All right, I can buy that. You guys convinced me. That makes a ton of sense. I'm on board with all that. Anything else, John? Maybe can you kind of tell us a little bit about the plot of Mallrats?
Yeah, I mean, the plot's fairly simple. There are these two guys, T.S. Quint and Brody Bruce. Some great references to Jaws in there. But these two buddies, and at the top of the movie, they get dumped for different reasons. T.S. gets dumped because he's very insensitive to his girlfriend, played by Claire Forlani, who's Michael Rooker's daughter. She has to guest on his game show because the contestant died because T.S. cracked a joke the night before about the contestant being, you know, the camera adding 10 pounds or whatever. And she got all nervous and had an embolism in the pool swimming laps. So he's insensitive to that because he wants to take her to Universal because he wants to propose to her when Jaws pops out of the water. Another Jaws reference. Mm-hmm. And then Brody gets broken up with Shannon Doherty early in the film because he won't introduce her to his mother. And she gives him like a whole laundry list worth of things. And during the entire breakup, he's playing in NHL 95. With the Whalers. Who were the Whalers playing, Corey? Because I know you remember this bit of trivia.
Who were they playing? I think they might have been playing the Devils. I'm not 100% though.
Yeah, I don't think. But it was a classic NHL 95 hockey game, and he was so distracted, and he has Shannon Doherty in his bed, and she's such an afterthought to him, and then she has to jump out the window because he's hiding her from his mom. But Shannon Doherty at this point in her career was kind of on the downside for a bit. This was in between 90210 and Charmed. And she had this reputation of being difficult to work with and took this movie to show she was a team player. And I think she does a fantastic job being a team player in a cast with relative unknowns, like Affleck's in this. There's a lot of people who become people in this, but they aren't people yet.
Like Jason Lee.
Yeah, he was a professional skateboarder at this time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was only a professional skateboarder and steals the show. Jason London was like tapped to be like the next big up and coming actor, and it didn't quite pan out for him. Claire Forlani was another up and coming actress, and she goes on to make Meet Joe Black with Brad Pitt after this, and Anthony Hopkins. So you know she makes her way up. Michael Rooker, we know what happens to him after this. Like Michael Rooker at this point in his career was in a lot of things and was that guy from that thing. He wasn't quite in Walking Dead or Guardians of the Galaxy yet, where he becomes like a household name, finally, overnight success, like 15 years later. But you know, he had done a lot of incredible work, like I was listing. Before this, he worked with Stallone and worked with Cruise and John Sayles and just some incredible directors and actors leading into this.
Well, and fun fact, my last family picture was taken with Michael Rooker at a fan expo in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. And my daughter, who was 9 at the time, after we were done, we're walking behind the curtain, and she goes, says really loudly, "Dad, Yondu shook my hand." And you could hear him laughing on the other side of the camera. He thought that was the best. So Michael Rooker's a super terrific guy. Do you guys know some of the other actors who were in line for this film? For the role of Brody, do you guys know who were the two finalists?
I don't.
No.
It was Adam Sandler and Steve Zahn.
Wow.
It's a very different movie, but I can see it. Like, it's a very different movie. It becomes an Adam Sandler movie with Sandler, though. There's no way around it. And yeah. Steve Zahn, I don't know that Steve Zahn.
I could see that one. Think back to that thing you do, like that type of character.
I can absolutely see it. I'm thinking more. I'm more. I said Jason London. I meant his brother Jeremy London. Jeremy London's the one in this one. The twins, and I sometimes confuse them, but I'm having trouble seeing Steve Zahn because he is shorter in stature, and I don't know how that films with him being the shorter friend, because Brody is such a presence in this movie. I think that you have to recast Jeremy London if you're going to cast Steve Zahn in that role, to somebody a little bit shorter in stature. Because I need them on even ground. Because I need to believe that Brody kind of dominates TS.
Well, and I think that the way that Jason Lee played the character, he was kind of like the Bill Murray. I mean, we were talking not too long about Ghostbusters and how, you know, the script was fairly dry until Bill Murray started making it an interesting script. And I kind of feel the same way for Brody. I think without him being so over the top and having the personality he did, this movie is what it is because of him in a lot of ways.
Yeah. His line reading, and it's really because, like, Kevin Smith knows the dynamic he needs. He needs that one dry character, and he needs that one boisterous character. And it's the same chemistry that he had with Clerks is what he was going for this. And he's mimicking movies like Stripes, like Bill Murray movies of the 80s, and that kind of chemistry with it. So he knows very much what he's doing. Jason Lee might not be bringing the improvisation of a Bill Murray to this, but his line reading, the way he yells, the way he just, "Oh, come on, we do that all the time." Like, just the way he's hitting those high pitches with his yells. Really adds an element to this movie and matches the angst of the music that we're going to hear as we talk about it and get into it more.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to you know, that dynamic, the kind of dry and the eccentric kind of mirrors what it happens in Kevin Smith's next film, Chasing Amy, as well. Finalist for the T.S. Quint character was Henry Thomas, who you might remember from a little movie called E.T. He also did the Jack Nicholson role in Dr. Sleep, the Shining sequel as well. I'm not the biggest fan of Jeremy London. I thought the Jeremy London, Claire Forlani stuff was a lot worse than the Shannon Doherty, Jason Lee stuff. What is your take on maybe a guy like Henry Thomas taking that role?
Oh, I would have loved to have seen that. If it was hit, and this is no offense to Jeremy London, but if we could have had Henry Thomas and Jason Lee, you know, even if we had Jason London, because Jason London's in Dazed and Confused, and you know, Jason London's, I enjoy him. I don't want to say he's a better actor than his brother, but I enjoy him more than his brother. I think he comes off a lot more natural on camera than his brother. And I think that's all you needed with somebody who comes off more natural. There's no doubt Henry Thomas would have been great in this role.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, when I interviewed Dee Wallace, we had talked about him at some point, and she just had nothing but the greatest things to say about him. I honestly, Jeremy London's the one person in this entire film I thought was completely replaceable. I don't think he brought anything special to that role at all.
I agree 100%. Couple of quick things before we get into the song. Sorry, John, you want to chime in with something?
No, I just wanted to say, we're mentioning all the actors in this movie and actresses in this movie, and I would be remiss. I don't know about you guys, but I watched a little bit of Boy Meets World in the 90s, and I would be remiss if I don't bring up Ethan Suplee. Ethan Suplee does some wonderful stuff with very little to do in this movie. Just trying to see the goddamn sailboat. He has great interactions with everybody who walks up to him, yelling at the little kids, getting upset with Stanley. Like every shot with him interacting with anybody, I can watch that as its own short submitted to the Academy Awards and be happy with however it's going to do.
See, that's exactly who I was going to bring up next, because not only is he great, but he plays a character that's portrayed in Clerks that's played by Scott Mosier. And it's been a while since I've seen Clerks. John, I'm hoping you could tell me, who's Willem Black in Clerks?
Oh, Willem Black in Clerks.
Wasn't he Snowball?
Yeah, he was like the weird guy walking around. Like, just in the... Scott Mosier plays like three characters in Clerks.
Right.
And I believe it's just the guy kind of walking around without dialogue, doing weird stuff in the store the whole time.
Okay.
Kind of mugging for the camera, but kind of not, like just doing awkward things, having awkward interactions with everybody. And like, oh, that's Willem.
Wasn't he the one that said, that had the interaction with Veronica saying, "Hey, Ronnie, I thought you were back in Seton Hall this year," and that stuff, and that turned out to be Snowball? Or was that, I might be mixing him up with one of the other characters he played, but I thought at the end she said that's Willem. He, when Dante said, "Who's that?" And she said, I thought she said that's Willem.
He was one of her 37, right? I think I remember that now.
Yeah. But I want to add to the Ethan Suplee conversation, for anybody who is a fan of the Pod Meets World podcast that a couple of the folks from Boy Meets World do now. Ethan was just a guest this Monday on that very show, because he shot Mallrats while he was shooting Boy Meets World. This was actually going on at the same time. And what a diverse actor he really turned out to be. I mean, that American History X, his role in American History X was definitely worthy of an award to me.
No, my name is Earl. That's kind of where I agree with Ethan Suplee. And of course, that's a series that stars one Jason Lee.
That's right.
So I looked it up for you guys. So you're correct. He is Snowball, right? Which, snowballing, in case anybody doesn't know, and look, this is a Kevin Smith episode, so we're going to get into it. Caitlin Bree. I'm not Caitlin Bree, it's his other girlfriend, right? Because he's one of the 37. Blows him, and then spits it back into it, like kisses him afterwards. And that's like what he's into, and that's why he's Snowball. He's at one point shooed away by an angry hockey player, also played by Scott Mosier. So he's playing characters yelling at himself in this movie. you know, he hangs out with Jay and Silent Bob, offering them a sandwich. He's listening to, he's hanging out with Silent Bob when Silent Bob's cousin's listening to Berserker. And at the end, he sneaks into the ambulance that's taking away Caitlin Bree.
Oh, that's right.
So, So you know, he has a lot there, and then they give him a bigger role in Mallrats, and he'll appear in other stuff later on. It seems like a lot of comic books and stuff they bring the character into after the fact, but we you know, in this movie he has a much expanded role, but that much expanded role is just trying to cross his eyes and look at one of those weird mall posters that you're supposed to see in 3D. It's a sailboat, it's a schooner, it doesn't matter, because poor Willem doesn't see it for the duration of the movie. He does see it after the movie, we find out, but not during the movie.
Yeah. And Scott Mosier, we should point out very quickly, was the producing partner of Kevin Smith through this whole period. Produced everything right up to, I think, Tusk might have been his last one. He's off. He's directing animated films right now. He did the new Grinch movie that came out from Illumination a few years ago.
And I think he was the stage director in this one, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yeah. Roddy. Yeah.
And I have to make a correction. It was not Alyssa Jones that was doing the sex book. It's Trish the Dish, played by Renee Humphrey, who I thought did a really good job. Not an outstanding character, not a lot you could do with it, but I thought she played her role pretty well.
A 15-year-old making sex tapes. Yeah, that in today's climate, you know, maybe doesn't play quite as well. One more quick thing about casting before we play the song. Jason Mewes, Universal did not want Jason Mewes to play Jay. They had a couple other actors in mind that Mewes had to audition against. Do you know those two actors?
I know one of them was Seth Green.
That's correct. Seth Green is one. Do you know the second? Anyone?
That I don't.
Anyone? Bueller?
David Spade.
Incorrect. Brecken Meyer was the other one. Close to him.
The All other right. David Spade.
Yeah. We've put this off long enough. John, tell the folks what our song is this week.
Oh, I don't even remember what we picked. I was so excited to talk about the movie.
We're going with the Goops and the song in their cover of Build Me Up Buttercup.
So here's a spoiler for everybody. I know very little about this band, the Goops, but I do enjoy the song Build Me Up Buttercup. It first got on my radar. Yeah, I think it was before this, right? Yeah. In Dumb and Dumber, right? Not Dumb and Dumber.
There's something about Mary. Mary.
Yeah.
1998. It came after this, actually.
It came. Yeah. So just follow my memory here. Okay. My memory is spotty. No. So yeah, I guess I know it more from that. So I'm like, oh, let's go with that because we need a song to talk about because that's the podcast. But we really want to talk a lot more about Kevin Smith and this movie, which we'll probably do. And if we want to talk about the song a little bit, we'll give some credit to the Goops because it is a fun version, a fun cover of the song.
It really is. And it fits the soundtrack like a T. So what do you say, boys? Here we go. This is Build Me Up Buttercup by the Goops.
This is perfect because this production right now feels like the movie. That's the Mallrats theme song by Wax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost every song on this soundtrack starts that way.
I just wanted to be right about something for once, Corey.
Yes, Wax did do the theme song to Mallrats. You are correct.
Poor Scott's mortified right now. He's like, why am I on a podcast with the Baboons?
Well, no, I was just trying to figure out how to explain what following your memory is like. And it's kind of like being on the boat on the Chocolate River in the original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie. It's an exciting ride. You know you're going to get somewhere important, but it's kind of scary along the way.
See, I equated it more to being on the boat in the chocolate ride on the remake of the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory movie that Tim Burton did, and that it's just frightening, the entire thing.
Come on, ride with it. So we're not going to listen to the Goops?
Yeah, what the fuck? It's playing Mallrats.
Is this the right song?
No, it's not. Do you want to keep going on Mallrats, or do you want to play Build Me Up Buttercup, since that's what we were talking about?
I thought that's what we were going to do, man. I'm just trying to keep the show back on track. I really love the way this episode's going right now for so many reasons, mainly because I've screwed up so many times. You've had a couple of flubs, and it feels appropriate for a movie that you felt was uneven.
It really does. So that intro that John correctly said sounded a lot like Wax. And I thought, it's just because every song in this era sounds the same. He was actually right. We were playing Mallrats by Wax. We're supposed to be playing Build Me Up Buttercup. Thank you, iTunes. Let's try it again here. Hey, there we go. All right, Scott, you're the musician on the panel. What do you think of that?
This is such a typical Kevin Smith style song for one of his movies in this universe. This could have easily fit on the Clerks soundtrack as well. In fact, I wonder if this might have been one that he thought about for Clerks and then just put it in Mallrats. Musically, it's very energetic. The guitars are over fuzzy, not distorted, but over fuzzy. The vocals, I don't like the vocals, though. She's very nonchalant. You know, this is an emotional song that should have some element of passion. I feel like she's just trying to get through the words as quickly as possible. The sound of the snare is killer, though. I love the way it's cutting through. Could use a little more kick drum, but not too bad musically.
You know, very thin, kind of what you'd expect from a 90s production, right? Sounds like Bush, sounds like Weezer at the time, sounds like Wax so much so I played the wrong fucking song, apparently. John, what are your thoughts on the first 32 seconds of Build Me Up Buttercup?
It's fast. It's very fast. It's muddy. It's typical for what I would probably hear either on my radio or at a friend's house while we were sitting around bullshitting. And I probably, honestly, if I were at a friend's house just hanging out drinking, either turn it off or turn it down because I need something a lot more mellow if I'm gonna have a conversation than this. But it fits this movie and it fits this scene, which is so chaotic, so well, because what's going on in the movie at this point is Jason Lee, Rudy Roos, grabs Renee, his ex-girlfriend, played by Shannon Doherty, in the elevator, and they get into a small argument and then have what Jason Lee thinks is makeup sex. And it was too little too late, according to Renee, at this point in the movie. But it's so chaotic and so fun. And outside the elevator, Ben Affleck's Shannon, the douche from Fashionable Male, is waiting there to beat the shit out of Rudy Roos.
Oh, you pointed it out, Scott, and I can't agree more. The lead vocal there, just uninspired. It's like she wants to be anywhere else. That's Eleanor Whitledge from the band The Goops. It's kind of taking me out of the experience of the song here a little bit.
I feel like she's getting paid by the word, you know, and the faster she gets it out, the sooner, like it, as she's being paid in coins as she sings each one, especially that part, the ooze, you know, that's supposed to be kind of a little bit of a letting out some emotion. And it's just like, okay, I said, ooh, give me another dollar. You know, yeah. Vocals are just terrible. The bass, though, the bass guitar really cut through on this last section. And man, that sounds really good.
And the backup I thought was pretty good, too.
Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of upset that I've never had sex in a mall elevator and my chances are dwindling.
Why? You're a young man, Scott. You live in Las Vegas, for fuck's sakes. This happens like dozens of times daily down there, doesn't it? I've been to Vegas. I've seen the elevators.
I want to challenge
Scott.
There's
that one at the Luxor. It goes on an angle because it's a pyramid. That thing's right. Freaky.
The inclinator.
I want to challenge Scott. Like, we're now far past this movie. You have to go bigger, better, and more extreme, and more dangerous. Okay. Once you do something dangerous, Scott. And by that, I mean, you have sex on an escalator.
It was, as we learned in this movie,
fucking escalators are dangerous.
Yes, they are. That kid is back on the escalator.
It's one of my favorite things. Like, he's so distracted by that. It's like moments like that are standout moments for Jason Lee in this movie.
And I have Absolutely. To love Kevin Smith's writing in here. It's like he wrote the movie. Okay, what else can I put in there? What else? Oh, you know what would be cool? Kid on the escalator. All right, what else? I just feel like he was always trying to find another thing to add just another flavor to the movie. And that was one of those little gems that it just shows up in the movie out of nowhere. You forget about it. And then as soon as Jason Lee brings it up, it just comes right back. And that was a well-crafted bit, I think, in this movie.
Well, and you know, Kevin Smith is currently working on the sequel to be titled Twilight of the Mallrats. If someone's not fucking on an escalator, I don't know what he's doing anymore.
It's probably the downside of his career.
I think he's been on the downside of his career for about 20 years now.
I love anybody who just says fuck it and does what they want with their career. And he got to that point.
Oh yeah.
And whether it's Yoga Hosers or Moose Jaws or whatever he decides to work on, he does not care. He's doing it for an audience of one. If you want to go for the ride, great. And if not, well, go enjoy something else.
Yeah, no, the whole point of him leaving film school was like, this is stupid. I'm not going to do it that way. I want to make films the way I want to make them. And he made it work.
Absolutely. And look at his upcoming slate of movies. He has Twilight of the Mallrats, I think, is coming next. He has a sequel to Tusk called Tusks. That's going to be coming shortly after. And Moose Jaws, which is going to be shooting in my neck of the woods up here in Saskatchewan. Moose Jaw is 90 minutes away from where I live. I'm going there this weekend, actually, to see my parents. And it's going to be Jaws with a moose. And it's going to be absolutely fantastic.
You know, Corey, if we need to take a break from podcasting our Aerosmith show for a while because you're getting to work with Kevin Smith, I'll respect that. I'll support that.
Okay, well, I'll put my resume in. We'll see if he needs any extra help, cheap labor, to do Moose Jaws, because I would do it for free just to say, yeah, I worked on Moose Jaws. I have a Kevin Smith hockey jersey that I got from the Secret Stash. I ordered from the Secret Stash online, and it's the Moose Jaw logo with the teeth, and it's one of my prized possessions.
There you go. You got to do it.
Corey, you come to visit, and we'll take a trip to Red Bank, and I'll take you the Secret Stash.
Can't wait. Cannot wait. Yeah. Yep, I'm there with bells on, my friend. I've about heard enough. Anyone got anything they want to interject about the movie here? I'm waiting for somebody to wave and nobody's waving.
I think we're just trying to get through the song.
I'll interject about the movie. This is, bar none, my favorite Stan Lee cameo. Having seen all the Stan Lee cameos, this to me is the one Marvel has tried to repeat. Marvel even tongue-in-cheek references this cameo in Captain Marvel, in that he's reading the Mallrats script because it takes place in 1995, it's supposed to be like, I guess he's about to go do the movie or had just done the movie, so he's reading the script during his cameo. But this one in particular, talking about all the different superhero dicks, but trying to convince Brody about love and talking about love and superheroes and doing what was it, the soliloquy of the Vulture or whatever he called it, trying his best to talk about love in the terms of superheroes to change Brody's heart a little bit and open Brody's heart, I think is just brilliant.
It is an excellent piece of cinematography. And anyone that I know who's had the pleasure of meeting Stan Lee has had nothing but the nicest things to say about him. I've never, ever heard anybody say anything bad about him.
I didn't want you to have to listen to the song that much longer right now, Corey. So I came up with another thing to talk about. And I think at this point we should talk about Jay and Silent Bob and LaFour's, and we keep calling Michael Worker's character, but what was his name? Why am I blanking?
Oh, let me look it up here real quick. Jared Svenning. Mr. Svenning.
And just their dynamic of being great villains against each other. It's Jay and Silent Bob versus LaFour's. It's really Brody Bruce versus Mr. Svenning. As much as T.S. Quint tries to like interject and act like he's the big tough guy and stand up to him, it's not till Mr. Svenning gets served a chocolate-covered pretzel. And we get that close-up of the melted chocolate all over the two hands as they shake. But before Brody Bruce serves him a chocolate-covered pretzel, in the scene right before that, he is teaching T.S. about the stink bomb. And he jams his hand in between his sweaty cheeks and then, you know, has to try to eat the pretzels and mashes his face into the bag. But he has no way to eat it because he has a handful of shit. But he uses that handful of shit to serve Mr. Svenning in one of the greatest visual gags in cinema history.
Now, wasn't that before he had sex with Shannon Doherty in the elevator?
No, I believe it was after, because then he starts feeling sick.
Okay. I thought it was after.
Yeah. Okay, then that makes more sense, because all of a sudden I was thinking, now I'm kind of thinking that scene wasn't as great as it could have been if it was after he stuck his hand up his ass. But order of operation is very important here, especially in a scene like that.
I gotta believe, though, that Renee is shoving her finger in his ass while they have sex. Like, it feels like they're that kind of couple.
I can see that.
Well, hey, if she's going down on him while he's playing NHL 94, like, that tells you all you need to know. She's the perfect woman.
When did they do the throwback to the pretzel scene? Was it in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, when he was explaining what Hollywood was to Jay and Silent Bob?
Yeah, I think it was. He was like, hey, would you like a chocolate covered pretzel? Like, he says it like that again. Mm-hmm. But they don't actually have the chocolate covered pretzels in it, I don't think.
I get that joke now. I watched Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back a few times. I never got that joke. Now I get it. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing about the universe, is there's a lot of so much interconnection that some of the humor, if you didn't watch it in order, you might miss out on some of this. They're not things that would ruin the film, but just little jokes like that you wouldn't necessarily understand the value of if you hadn't seen the movies in order.
See, Kevin Smith in the Viewisk universe was doing it before Marvel ever did.
Mm-hmm.
That's Build Me Up Buttercup by the Goops from the Mallrats soundtrack. I was trying to look up some trivia on the Goops, and all I could find were that they formed in 1992, and that's about it.
I'm shocked. I was just getting ready to interrupt the song so that we didn't have to hear that much of it in one chunk. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention Priscilla Barnes and her all-seeing third nipple.
That's right. I was kind of shocked to see Priscilla Barnes from Three's Company fame topless in Mallrats with a third nipple.
You're welcome.
It was impressive.
Yeah. Not mad at it at all. And another thing, for fans of the TV series Comic Book Men, that was on AMC that Kevin Smith was a part of with the Secret Stash Boys. Brian Johnson has his own podcast called Tell Him Steve Dave. And if you don't know where that title comes from, it comes from this movie because he plays a guy named Steve Dave Pulaski. And Walt Flanagan is Walt Fanboy Grover yells, "Tell him Steve Dave," and the rest is history.
And Walt Flanagan's also in Clerks.
Yep, he was the egg guy.
Yeah,
he was about eight different people in that movie. Yeah. He was, as they called him, the Lon Chaney of Clerks, which is true. It's nice to see some of those little, those just little treasured moments that the first time you watch the film, they might not mean anything to you, but then you find that connection, like the podcast name and things later on. I think they also refer to him in Chasing Amy, maybe. I think there's another reference to Steve Dave somewhere in the series.
Oh, Jane saw Bob Strike Back, I think, coming out of the Bluntman and Chronic movie. I thought Dave and Walt were coming out of the theater, if I remember
correctly. I believe they also make an appearance in what was it? Maybe it was Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. That's the second Jay and Silent Bob, right?
No, first one.
And I think they're in the second Jay and Silent Bob movie, too.
Reboot?
Yeah, reboot.
Yeah, I've only seen that one once. I don't remember offhand.
Yeah, I've only seen it once too, but he put every character in that movie.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, I really kind of want to see the movie version that they made of Clerks in the View Askew universe because I want to see Judi Dench playing Dante.
I feel like we all want to see that.
I feel like we're really missing something
there. And Gil, Dante's cousin as well.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
All right, boys, let's put a bow on this one. John, anything else you want to say about Mallrats before we call it a night?
No, it's tougher for you because you've seen it so far removed from when you probably should have seen it.
Right.
That I understand out of context, and by context, I mean like time context, why picking up this movie today, for a lot of reasons, you being lukewarm on it at best. But, you know, it's not just a nostalgia bug for me. It's part of what built my love of cinema, right? Because it was very much of that time. Yeah, I was 18, 19 years old when I saw this movie. And you know, still developing my own taste as an adult. And this movie very much informed that.
Scott, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I really love this movie. I think part of it was the fact that it felt like it took forever to come out waiting after Clerks. But I think that this is a very misunderstood movie. It is not known to be a great movie. And if you really look at it as a comic book come to life, I think you could have a different appreciation for it. I would recommend it for anyone who loves this style of comedy. I'm not a big dick and fart joke guy. I think it's like, you know, if you have to go to that well, we've kind of done everything that needs to be done there. But for some reason, there's something about the way Kevin Smith and the way he delivers it that I find really enjoyable. And I think it's a great movie that people who like comedy should check out.
Well, it's going to be interesting when he does the sequel, because when he did Mallrats, he was sober, and now he's stoned 24 hours a day. And where he left these characters, T.S. married Brandy at Universal Studios on the Jaws attraction. The 15-year-old who made the sex tapes, her book is a bestseller. Ben Affleck was imprisoned and raped for raping a 15-year-old, which I guess good. Willem seized the sailboat, and Brody became the host of The Tonight Show somehow. And Shannon Doherty was his band leader. And Jane, Silent Bob get an orangutan. So he's going to have to pay off all those little threads now in Twilight of the Mallrats. You guys looking forward to the next one?
Oh, for sure. I think one thing that Kevin's always been good about in his movies is getting people back, even if it's just for a cameo. So I'm going to be very curious to see who comes back, what happens with each of those people. Maybe they come back as just entirely different characters. I could see him doing that with some of them. But it's going to be interesting to see what the story is, because everything was so, you know, wrapped up in a nice little bow. And the Jay and Silent Bob story continued on. Really, that continued on more in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back than it did in Chasing Amy. So I'll be curious to see where the story goes.
I want to see a mall blow up. I very badly am hoping that's how the next movie ends, is like the end of malls, right? Like, because it feels like that's what it should be. Like, it should be the swan song for this lifestyle, this period of time, for a lot of reasons. And to me, you have to kill the mall in the end.
Well, there are certainly plenty of empty malls across the continent that you could probably blow up, you know, just film the demolition, or you know, like when they shot Jason Bourne with Matt Damon, who is also part of the Viewsk universe, they shot part of that movie at a casino that was going to be imploded. So they were able to drive cars right through the casino floor. So I could see that being a very real possibility.
There you go, Kevin Smith. We got a mall in Saskatchewan here that's dying. Come shoot Twilight of the Mallrats here, and then just segue right into Moose Jaws. It's perfect. But we recommend you go check out Mallrats again. If nothing else, look for a young Luke Wilson in the audience watching Truth or Date, the dating show that is kind of the MacGuffin of this entire movie. But Scott Haskin, let's wrap this up. Where can the folks find you, and what do you got coming up?
Well, let's see. My newest album, The Shattered Room, just came out. So there's that. And my book series, The Universal Court, and my other podcast, The Haskin Cast Podcast, and Uriah Heep, The Magician's Podcast, as well as what I do with these guys, Backtracks, Aerosmith Revisited. And you can find hubs to all of that stuff on my website at scotthaskin.com.
There you go. John Mariano, you got a website, a book, or an album to plug here tonight?
I do. I actually have three books.
Oh, good.
To plug. I just got them in the mail from this. Have you heard of it? It's like this little niche site. I used to hang out at the mall, and now I hang out online at a little niche site called Amazon.
What's that? Amazon? I never heard Amazon, of it.
It's kind of like the rainforest, but like not as good for the environment.
Oh, okay.
But I go there, and they got this guy there, this Scott Kahaskin. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you pronounce the K or if I'm just supposed to say the letter K. Scott K. Haskin, Scott Kahaskin.
I think it's Scott Kahaskin. You know how sometimes the K is silent? This case, the K is actually more prominent.
Right.
So it's supposed to be Scott Kahaskin.
Yeah. You said you found this on the Amazon?
Yeah, I found this on the Amazon. It's a Scott Kahaskin. And he has the series called The Universal Court Book 1, The Universal Court Book 2. And finally, and this is where he throws you for a curve, The Universal Court Book 3.
Oh, geez, I thought we were going right to 5. And that's clever.
And if you go on the Amazon and you Google those names, because that's what I call search now, and you look, or you look for Scott Kahaskin, you can order yourself these three books, and you can find me in my home reading these three books.
Probably pantsless as well. So there you go, folks. Go on the Amazon, search, Google Scott Kahaskin, and try and find these Universal Court books. They're better than Night Court. Night Court's just one night. This is the entire universe, this court. So you're going to want to check out those books. But on behalf of John Mariano and Scott K. Haskin, my name is Corey Morissette. Thank you very much for joining us. And we will see you next time on Backtracks Theme Music.
There, that was romantic, right? Passionate, yeah.
No, Brony, that was too little too late.
Too little? You said it was a good size.
The effort, you retard. The effort was too little too late. But now that you mention it, when a girl says it's a good size, it's a nice way of saying that it's small.
Hey!